All right, we won't worry about the colour too much. We'll see if we can get that fixed. That seems to be served off my laptop. But we'll get into the session. Thanks very much for coming. My name's Paul Conroy. We're going to be talking about a Forefront Identity Manager deep dive. I recognise a few faces in the crowd, which is good. Just a quick word of warning before we jump into it. This isn't an introduction to FIM. If you'd like an introduction to FIM, this isn't a great place to start, because we're going to be talking about the deep functionality, or the new functionality and a deeper look on the R2 version. If you'd like an introduction to FIM, there's a couple of good places to start. First one, just go and search for those keywords there, TechNet for Implementing Forefront Identity Manager. So there you'll go to some really good online training. That's the RAMP training, which is available, and that's about 8 individual courses on setting up the synchronization service, setting up the FIM service, building management agents, all that kind of stuff. So if you want that kind of session, feel free to pick yourself up and leave. No shame in walking out. But if you do want to go to a deep dive, then you're in the right place. So let's start with talking about why identity management. There are quite a few seasoned campaigners in the audience, a few people who've been dealing with FIM for many years, back since the old days of MIIS and even before that. Now is a really good time to be working with FIM. Microsoft, as well as the other vendors, are always talking about cloud, and all the reasons to take your on-premise assets and take them into a utility service. But when you start getting down to the nuts and bolts, when you start getting into the detail of that, it's not as easy as it sounds. You've got multi-forest scenarios. You've got issues of consolidating users before you take them to an off-premise situation. And FIM works perfectly in that situation. So that's one of the reasons why this is a full session at the moment, and that's one of the reasons why it's generating a lot of interest at the moment. Not just for cloud-based assets as well. Also for on-premise services from Microsoft, for example. Link is a very popular voice solution, and when you provision voice users in a single forest scenario, it's nice and easy. However, when you have multi-forest scenarios, then the world starts to get a bit harder. You're going to have to use some kind of identity management solution to get a consolidated user provisioned into that multi-forest scenario. That's another reason why the solution is quite popular at the moment. Forefront Identity Manager R2. Okay, so a long-awaited revision of the solution came in 2010. That was the upgrade from Identity Lifecycle Manager to FIM, as I will call it in the presentation. And now we're about due for another revision of the solution. It's going to be an R2 this time. So we're going to be working on a few extra features, but also importantly, consolidation of what was delivered in 2010. So things such as, you can read up there on the board, a couple of things that customers were crying out for, such as a web-based self-service password reset portal. Also, increased troubleshooting and fault-finding tools, so the reporting has been improved. Also, performance. Performance has been improved for the solution as well. Probably the second most requested solution was enhanced reporting. So out of the box, you had a web services interface where you could make calls onto it. You couldn't get that kind of out-of-the-box basic reporting. And in FIM R2, there is a reporting service which leverages System Center, which I'll show you as part of this session. Finally, the enhanced management agent connectivity. I'm going to talk briefly about that, but there's another session on Friday as well where we're going to go even deeper in using the ECMA, or the Extensible Management Agent, as we're calling it. All right, jump into it. So the first one of those, I'm going to go through those sequentially. We're going to talk about all the new features, and I'm going to jump into a demo, which was just getting up before the start of the session. So the first one is the web-based self-service reset portal. Quick poll of the room. Who here has deployed FIM 2010? Who here has deployed the solution before? Okay. All right, so those who have deployed the solution, I can see that you're probably familiar with the scenario that there always was a web-based interface to reset your password. So when users forget their passwords, they answer some basic questions, reset their password. There always was a web-based portal. Most people would reset it through the changes to the Windows logon page. But to do that web-based reset, it would actually call the controls on the client machine. There were actually ActiveX controls. The web page would call the ActiveX, and then that would pop up the questions and answers, which really wouldn't be a good scenario if you're at home using your son's machine and you wanted to reset your password, or you're in the Qantas Club Lounge and you wanted to reset your password so you can get back to your other device. It wouldn't work. Because at the back end, it used Kerberos constrained delegation, and so there were Kerberos tickets being thrown around and you needed to be on a domain. That has been resolved for this version of the solution. So it serves up a web page. You can access that web page, not necessarily an Internet Explorer. You can go there with another web browser. Firefox is what I'm going to demonstrate. Those questions will be served. You'll be able to answer those questions. And I'll go through a little bit of the topology later on about how that is done. So essentially, non-domain users can reset their password, which was the goal of the solution. Also, I know there's a lot of system integrators in the crowd. To do an upgrade from ILM 2007 to, FIM 2010 to 2010R2, you are going to be able to do an in-place upgrade. There are some caveats on that, but essentially you can do an in-place upgrade to produce the password reset portal solution can connect to your old FIM service. All right, so this is what the topology looks like. As you can see, over on this side, we've got our old FIM service. That can be the same 2010 service that you had before, the synchronization engine, an Active Directory, all provisioning your users, using the PCNS to synchronize passwords, whatever is required over here. And you've got your old client parts right here. So it's still using the same extension to the Gina, or the same replacement for the Gina, to do the password reset with FIM 2010R2, there's still the SharePoint portal where you can do the administration interfaces, you can do your white pages scenarios, you can still update your attributes, and those will all be flowed on to AD as it was done in the past. However, this is the new part. So what we have is essentially another portal which is being served up, which will then have the questions and answers which will be able to be answered by the users, even if they're not in a domain join scenario. So this, we're just sort of intimating best practice here, where you've got a DMZ scenario, you've got a reverse proxy, for example, UAG and a firewall sitting at the back, having a DMZ. And there are actually two parts to the portal. There's the password registration page, so that's new users to the organization who already know their password, or they're able to go to that page, put in their password, and then answer those personalized questions. That is a separate web page to the reset portal, which is when people forget their passwords, they want to be able to go to a portal, answer those questions that they probably answered when they joined the organization, and then be able to reset their password from a non-domain join scenario. That's the topology. All right, what I'll do is just... Can you see that at the back? It's a little bit short there. What I'll do is just try and zoom in. Test my coordination. Okay, so this is part of the deployment scenario. So as you can see here, when you deploy the password registration portal, what you do is, with the old solution, you're able to deploy the FIM service and the FIM portal, but now you also have the option of deploying the FIM registration portal and the FIM reset portal. Now, these are separate installs, which is nice because you can then choose to deploy them on a different machine. If you've already deployed them if you've already deployed 2010 on an existing infrastructure, you can choose to put the registration and reset portal in a different location on your DMZ. At the moment, FIM 2010R2, and I'll just call it R2 for brevity's sake, R2 is in a community evaluation beta at the moment. Can I just have a quick poll of hands? Who has already downloaded the evaluation? Okay, Active, so a smattering of people. And of those, how many have already done the install? Okay, great. So only three. So this is new to a lot of people. So I'll make sure I continue to go down it. Okay. And it's at this point, when you do the installation, you can choose which box it goes on. Pretty simple. That's the first part. The second part is you can actually determine whether that is going to be for internal network use or external network use as well. What R2 will do, it will actually determine the security context of the user who's logging onto the machine, but also will determine the security context of where the service resides, and it may ask extra questions of users which are external to the organization, which makes sense. And I'll show you the workflows of how that's done. So, for example, someone's trying to reset their password from a from inside their network. There's a relatively high chance that they're employees of the organization. Ask them five simple questions. However, if they're coming from home, then there's a higher chance that they're not employees of the organization. So ask them those three simple questions, but ask them something extra as well, or take an extra action because of this particular security context. Okay, you can also specify the AD account for the portal, so it doesn't necessarily have to use the same Active Directory user account that was used for the deployment of the FIM service or the SYNC service, which is good if you deploy it in a DMZ scenario. And finally, when you deploy the service, you're able to see as the website under IIS on the separate server that you run it. So as you can see, they're separate components with the architecture and the topology diagram I showed you before. They're separate components, can be deployed independently and within a DMZ. All right, there's a lot of people here, so I'll start by asking questions, but if there are too many questions, I might have to just leave them to the end. Any questions about the topology and how the password reset portal is deployed? No questions? Okay, I'll move. Yeah, Jeff, jump in. Okay, good question. I'll just repeat it for the microphone. The question was, does the password reset portal have to be a domain join machine? It's a good question. I have to check. I haven't even looked at that. So I believe not. Just the fact that you have a firewall on the back end means that you'd have to open up all the AD ports, which would cut your firewall to Swiss cheese. So I believe that's not the case, but I'll double check that one. Any other questions? Okay, we'll move on. All right, so the registration portal makes requests to the FIM service. It actually uses SOAP headers from the FIM service to determine the identity context. So there's an optional SOAP header onto the request that goes from the extranet portal back to the FIM service, and that can determine whether it's an extranet portal, whether it's an intranet portal, or it could decline to put any security context on that at all. And based on that security context, it will call the workflows or the actions within a workflow which says, ask this person some extra questions, or in some circumstances, you may want to route it to an SMS gateway to launch one-time password authentication to a mobile phone or something like that for an external user. That's similar with the reset portal. The reset portal acts independently, but it also has the security context with it as well, based on a SOAP header. The FIM service identifies the requests. It will then pass those requests back to the synchronization service and then through the Active Directory management agents to reset your passwords against AD. Okay. Authentication and password reset, As I sort of intimated here, extensibility for customer-specific needs. The product team has seen an obvious need for external password reset. There could be scenarios where you want to do things like CACHPA, where you have those sort of fuzzy letters that you want to answer to stop denial of service attacks, or for extra security, you want to route things to an SMS gateway, launch one-time passwords against a mobile phone, or maybe do a radius authentication against an RSA server or another company that does the one-time password tokens. There is not any functionality out of the box for that. So there is no CACHPA, there is no out-of-the-box routing requests to a one-time password server. However, that is currently in the product team's test matrix, so that's currently being tested because it's a very reasonable request. For example, two-factor authentication for smart cards. You can lock down IIS to have smart card authentication right there. So it's not part of the product per se, but as you deploy the solution, you should be able to do two-factor authentication, and that's currently in the test matrix. All right, any questions before I get onto the demo? I'll show you the password reset portal and what it looks like, and we'll jump into some of the workflows from there. No questions? All right, jump on in. Okay. Don't want that. All right, what I have here is a demo environment. I've got a whole bunch of demo machines, one running the FIM service, one running the reporting service, and a Windows 7 machine, obviously running Firefox here. It does not have the... I better put that up there. Where's that? All right. There we go. And I'll just put it to search for the password registration portal. There we go. All right, what I'll do is double the screen, otherwise I'm looking over my shoulder all the time. Okay, that'll take a few seconds before it finds the FIM service.
There we go.
Okay, so what I have is a demo machine. We've got the FIM service running on one box. We've got the reporting services running on another. If you remember from the architecture slide that I showed you, it looks for the security context of the user as it's looking in there. So I've put in some credentials for the user there. So we've got a Windows 7 machine just logged onto the machine, logged onto a domain. It does not have the ActiveX components. It does not have any of the FIM client components. So this wouldn't work on FIM 2010. Also, we're using a Firefox browser, so that wouldn't work with FIM 2010 either. Takes a little while to load up. Personally, I blame Firefox, but I'll just leave that. And there we go. This is what it looks like. So it sounds like three, four, or five people in the audience have already loaded this up. So this is the password registration portal. This is then calling the workflows on FIM, which I'll show you in a second, and ask you those questions and answers for the first time that you register. Now, this is for a non-domain join machine. To me, it makes a lot of sense that when someone does the registration, they should be within the domain. But you've got the options of deploying that so people can register for password reset outside. So, this user... has to register by entering a password, and these are the workflow questions that I've entered in earlier. AFL team, swans, and tigers. I'll just enter in these, and I'll pay some attention so I don't forget them. So as you can see, the first two questions are actually okay questions to ask because they require users' personal opinion, sort of what's your favourite football team. The last two questions are intentionally bad. They're actually asking for facts. So who won the premiership in 2005 is obviously a bad question. So there, I've done it. I've actually gone ahead and reset a password right there on the portal. I'm sure you know how it works. So if I then go to the password reset page, I'm able to reset my password by answering those personal questions and questions and answers. So what I'll do is show you the workflow and what happened right there. I'll go to the FIM service. And here we have the familiar old FIM web portal page. So I'm going to go to the workflows. And here we have our old favourite, the password reset authentication workflow. Just so I'm sort of understanding where everyone's at, who has played with the password reset authentication workflow before in FIM 2010? Okay, I'm worried that people are just tired and not putting their hands up. Hands up, who has never seen the password authentication workflow before? Who has never seen this before? Okay, all right, that's a far the majority. Yeah, I thought everyone had seen this before. So, okay, I'll just take it back a step. So what we saw with people resetting the questions, we saw all those sort of sports-oriented questions. I defined that by yesterday clicking on this and defining these particular questions. So I'll click on this. So this is the workflow which is kicked off by what is a management policy rule. So there's three things which are at the heart of Forefront Identity Manager. One is a set, which is a collection of users. The second one is a workflow, so these actions, authentications or authorizations. And the third one would be a management policy rule or an MPR. So the rules fire the workflows based on sets. So for example, we could have a workflow and a set and an MPR that says any time that a engineer wants to reset their password, ask them these questions. Any time that a lawyer wants to reset their passwords, don't let them do it because we'll make them do a help desk call and they'll stuff it up and et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so you can actually make those intelligent decisions. I'm going to shut that. Okay, so this is the guts of the workflow here. So this is the challenge, the lockout gate. I won't go into the lockout gate, but that's essentially how many chances you give someone to try and reset their password. You can set the time frame for how long they'll be locked out, etc. But the Q&A gate is what we have right here. And this is what I set earlier in the day. So what I'll do is I'll edit that. Okay, so for those of you who haven't seen it before, I will just go through some of the old things, and then for those of you who it's new to, I'll just show you the new part as well. So it's at this point you determine the number of questions that are asked, how rigorous the questions are. So for example, in this scenario, I'm being quite strict that I'm asking for questions, and if I get any of them wrong, it won't let me log in. That's why I paid a little bit of attention. But for your enterprise, you want to make it a little bit easier. Maybe give people 10 questions to answer. Some of them might not be terribly sensitive, so people might choose not to answer them for political correctness, that kind of stuff. So only let them answer 8 as required, and then when they try and log in, only ask them 5 of those 8 in a random order, and in fact, unknowns to the user, they only have to get 3 right. So you've got something which is a nice blend of security and usability at the same time. It's up to your organisation to determine all those particular questions. The administration or the FIM administrators also have the ability to configure those questions. You obviously want to do that in collaboration with HR, where you define those questions. And importantly, you put those in there, the ones that are served. Now when we get to this part, this is the new part. In FIM 2010, You couldn't actually define the security context, but now you can. So for this particular one, I'll actually add some, what I'll do is I'll leave this as it is and I'll define some extranet questions. So what I'll do is I'll add an activity. I want to make it a little more rigorous for the extranet users to do some, to log in. So I'll add a new QA gate, select that. This is only for the extranet, so this is only a more rigorous one. I'll answer one question, just one extra question for the Q&A gate folks. And here it is. What is your favorite ice cream? Okay, so there we have it. Save that. Hit OK. And I've modified the workflow for extranet users. So what I'll do is I'll quickly jump back to my Windows 7 machine. And what we'll get is an extra layer. So for these extranet users, I'll be asked those same sort of sports-oriented questions, but also I'll have a second question as well. So as you can see, it's pretty easy. Within a few seconds, I'm able to define a workflow and make sure that the security context is either relevant for all the users or whether it's relevant for just the users who are logging in externally. So I'll make sure I get this right. All right. So what I'll do is do a bad. Oh, here we go. And as you can see, that workflow has been initiated. So it's asking the final question. And that's only for the external user context. So there you have some pretty easily implemented security controls using workflows and dependent on the security context. Jump back to the slides and we'll go through reporting. Okay, any questions about the portal? Because we're not going to go back to it anymore. Yep.
Are there any changes to that area that won't require them to re-enroll? So, like, can you sort of rein things back in? Say, if you create a pretty horrendous policy, you want to rein it back in. You potentially don't want everyone to re-enroll. Is that an automated thing that you have to re-enroll every time you make a change in that area?
Okay, so the question is, if you make changes to the Q&A and you don't want users to re-enroll, is that possible to have a limitation on that? So the answer is, for that one that I just did, once that user is enrolled, they're not going to have to... Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I'm not sure. If you add them. What if you added an extra question?
Like a question you have, I think, no, because in the database it's just got the Q&As that they've put in. So as long as those questions still exist and as long as the number that they're going to be asked is less than the number that you've got stored for them, I think it should be okay.
Yeah, it's, you don't sound sure, and I'm not sure as well. So I won't give you an answer because I'm not 100% sure. What was said just then, I definitely agree with. So I think if you wound the question that's down, you'd be able to answer those. If you added an extra question, then, yeah, I'd check before going through with that. So I will check and get you the answer to that. Yeah, at the back.
Option to change your password, like for a non-mandatory password, changing your setting your questions can actually do the
Okay, so the question is there a feature where you can actually do the password reset? Yeah, so you can, using workflows, you can initiate a password reset. Yeah. Can you just run it by me again?
If a user already entered those questions and answers,
yep.
Then if you get all those questions and answers again,
yep.
How does my admin go in to reset those?
Ah, okay, sure. So the question is, if the user completely forgets those personal questions, what action is there to take? So a help desk call, essentially. So.
Okay.
Reset those questions. The user can re-enroll for those questions if they know their password. So there are I'll just cut it short. So there are processes in which you can have an administrator initiate a password reset, or you could have the user reset their own questions. It would require the user's password to reset. You can't reset questions on behalf of another person unless you know their password. But come up to me later and I'll follow that. All right, so I'll keep on with it in the interest of time. So what we'll go on to now is the reporting. All right, so the reporting. As I said before, the FIM portal had ability to query things which had happened in a short period of time. There was not a persistent database of information within FIM. There was always a web services interface which you could pull data out and put it into a persistent data store, but there wasn't a persistent data store. There is now. So what the product team has decided to do is leverage another Microsoft asset, and that is System Center Service Manager. So at this point, you can take reports out of the FIM database, put them into the System Center Service Manager data warehouse, and you're able to then look at it through the rich reporting of System Center. So also using SSRS, you're able to do queries and export the data to Excel or something like that. But I think SSRS is going to be, SQL Server Reporting Services is going to be the most common way that users do rich reporting for changes which have been made with FIM. So, what you're currently able to do is have a look of where users are currently. Who's in Group A? Who's a person's manager? Those simple type of questions. You're able to do that from the FIM database via the portal. You simply go to the administration or search requests and you're able to get data out of there. You're able to look at events like who joined a particular group, who has left a particular group. That's still available through the FIM requests via portals. But any historic information, such as we had a security incident on the 1st of January, who had access to this particular group, that kind of persistent information is now available via FIM reporting. And as well as state information, so who had access to it, as opposed to the previous one, which was events. So how did a particular filter change over time? That's available through the FIM portal and reporting. This is the architecture of the FIM portal. So we have the FIM database, we have the reporting logs, and we're able to then stage those using PowerShell to actually do an initial sync to synchronize those particular reports and put it into the staging area of System Center's data warehouse. We're able to also, through PowerShell, call incremental synchronizations and then put it into the data warehouse, which we have to stage as well. One important thing to note, people who work with enterprises and system integrators, there may be some reluctance to deploy System Center. There is a limited use license of System Center with the product. So if you want to use System Center just for FIM reporting, then you don't have to pay a license for it. So essentially, you, as long as you use it for that purposes only, you're able to use the reporting features right here. Once you've staged the data, once you've put it into the data warehouse, you're then able to get the rich reporting from SSRS, and you're able to view it through the console, or you're able to view it in an Excel spreadsheet, wherever you choose to export it. All right, out of the box, there's a couple of reports. It's not comprehensive, but it just gives you a flavour of the things that you can build yourself, or you can get your system integrated to do. Out of the box, there's a membership change report, so who left a group, who added themselves to this particular group, and the object history report. So some basic reports are there out of the box, but I think with any enterprise organisation, you probably want your own individual ones created later. Okay, so example of the membership change report. I'm going to show you this a little bit later, and it'll make more sense than a wordy slide. So essentially, who's changed, who has joined a group, what are the details of that person, what's their username, what's all the details, who has approved the joining of that group, importantly, and what's the request ID, and what's the MPR which has allowed that person to join the group. So you've got a very rich amount of reporting data right there through SSRS. So, for example, a user, Samantha S, removes Colin from the marketing group. You actually can see the request an originator who actually made that call. If a particular user joins the group, you can see who was the originator and who did the approval. It's got a unique ID for that. And finally, when a role is changed, if something is initiated by the FIM service, which isn't done by a user-initiated entry, then that's recorded as well, again, with a unique request ID. Okay, I think the best way is to show you exactly how that works, so I'll jump in and show some of the reporting. VPNing into my demo machine, so it's a little slow. That's why. Sorry about that. Let's just restart that. And we're back. Okay, so what we have here is System Center. So I'm running System Center, Service Manager, and the Data Warehouse actually on separate machines, but I've got the interface available on the same box as the FIM service. So as those of you who are familiar with System Center Service Manager console, this will look familiar. We've got all the reporting services, but what we have here through the installation, and it's a wizard-based installation, just the same as FIM 2010, you're able to access some of the out-of-the-box reports that I showed you. So we've got the group membership change report that I talked about before. Did Samantha approve this user's change? Who joined, who left a particular group, as well as the request history report? But you want to probably make some extra reports on top of those. So what we do under PowerShell is actually do an initial sync as well as a incremental sync. So you actually have to take the data out of the FIM service into the staging area using PowerShell, using this command right here. So FIM reporting initial sync, call that, and then if you make any changes to groups, there'll be a change, an incremental sync that you have to do from there. So you obviously want to automate that to take it to the staging area, which is only the first step. I'm not going to run that in the background. What I have done is I'll take you back to the FIM portal. So I've just kicked off an initial synchronization. What we have is an ability to check the stage of that particular synchronization by going to administration, all resources, and for those of you who are familiar with the FIM 2010 service, this is new. So you're actually able to check on the reporting stages, and right here is the initial sync that I just did. So this is taking the data out of the FIM database into the warehouse, and you can see that sync is completed. Now, if it was in motion, it would actually show you that it was being processed, but in this case, the initial sync has been done. And we've taken the data from the data warehouse, from the FIM service into the staging area, but it hasn't been put into the data warehouse. The second stage is actually programmatic as well. You actually have to call a PowerShell script to take the data out of that staging area, which I've just done with that initial sync, and then push it through to the data warehouse. And I'll call that in the background as well. So there's actually a scripting that's involved to take it from the data warehouse, which you want to obviously make programmatic as well. One thing to really emphasize is that last synchronization call that I just made to take it from the staging area. It's using actual ETL, so export, transform, load through System Center. So it's going to take at least 30 minutes to do that particular process. So to take the data from the staging area into the data warehouse is not going to be an instantaneous occurrence. It'll take approximately half an hour to do that. So two stages, has to be programmatized, and it's going to take a little time to do. So I ran one earlier using all good cooking show methodology. So after I've done the ETL, then this is what I get at the end. So I'll just have a look at the action date. All right, this has just been served up for too long, so it's not too happy with that. So what I'll do, I'll run that report, which will take a few seconds. So this one will actually show any changes to group membership. Who's joined a group, when they joined the group, who did the approval, who did the initiation. So this is a nice out-of-the-box report. And then finally, I'll show you how SSRS views that. So that was just because it was around for too long. Okay, so this is the reporting. I'll just show you onto the far right-hand side. Okay, so here we have, I'll just pull this down. So here we have some useful reporting. So for example, we have a group name called Tigers and a group name called Titans. And then earlier, these users were added to that. So we have these particular users, Kim, Jim, and Ed, were added to this particular group on this particular date, as well as this particular different group, Titans, and we had the administrator, David and Ed, join that particular group. I'll just take you to the far right-hand side so you're not missing out on anything, which is the actual MPR which is fired. So on the basis of what authority was the MPR fired, and also who was the requester and who was the approver. To join those particular groups, there wasn't a workflow that required authorization. But many MPRs to join security groups have MPRs which say an authorization is required. That will create an automated email which will then come into someone's inbox like a meeting request, and then that user, that approver can either approve or decline that person joining the group, and that will show up in that column right there. Yeah, the question was, can you have a multiple approver workflow? And the answer is yes. So you can have multiple approvers. You can have a group of five. Four people only have to approve it, but four do. And if those people don't approve it, you can even send escalations. So to send their manager an escalation which improves things, improves productivity a fair bit. Okay, so that's what it looks like through System Center, which isn't the prettiest way to view things. So what I'll do is show you through SSRS. Maybe this is timed out as well. So the data warehouse I have on a different machine, but I'm able to access it from this machine. This is SSRS, and you can see it's a lot more configurable from this particular interface. Service manager, FIM reporting, and this is the group membership that I showed you just before. Oop. All right, so that information that I showed you before, group display name, maybe you want to change that to see all users who have joined or are members of Group Tigers. And we can do a nice, easy search right there. So as you can see through Service Manager, it was pretty hard. We had to get through all the other reporting through there. But through a simple search term, we're able to see who these four users who joined the Tigers group. And it was Kim, Jim, Ed, and the administrator, as I showed you before. You're able to export that to Excel, and you're able to manipulate that offline as you like. So that was something that was called for as well. You've got this reporting. You've got this what I would call required reporting functionality. To say it's out of the box is a little bit of an exaggeration, because you do need System Center. You do need to export the data to a staging area, then to the data warehouse. But once you've done that, you've got all this full-featured reporting, which is definitely a vast improvement. Before, you had to call on the web services API, put the data into your own data store, which is probably SQL Server, but now you're able to do it with just infrastructure tools and scripting. So IT pros, as opposed to developers, are able to get access to the reporting, which is a nice change. Any questions about reporting before I go on to the next stage? Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. Why isn't there more automation with it? You can programmatize it. So this is in beta at the moment, and this is just me knocking up some scripts to stage the data and to take it through to the next stage. So hopefully there will be guidance on how to programmatize that. So you get the scripts, you call them regularly. So that will be the case. Why has Microsoft done it? It's just the best outcome possible with the limited time and resources. We want to get the beta into production as quickly as possible. Time and money is the answer. Yeah. So the question is, does the staging time grow significantly with user count? The answer is, I don't know, because it's only in beta, so I haven't seen anything that's changed. It makes sense that it would grow. I don't know about significantly. The half an hour, like, that change just there was only a few users, and that still takes half an hour. I think it's a function of System Center with the ETLs that it'll take half an hour. So, yeah, it requires testing. I don't know. Any questions before we move on? All right, I'll take a few questions at the end, so if you've got something that pops up, just let me know. So, I'll extend the screen. All right, the color's gone funny again, but I think we'll all live with a little bit more pink on that. Okay, so the next thing that has come out with the with the beta as well is a best practice analyzer tool. So those who've done deployments before have probably noticed the difficulties with setups and troubleshooting. So there have been significant improvements with the troubleshooting tools that are available, and the best practice analyzer, similar to the AD best practice analyzer. So once you've done the deployment, if there are issues such as a service not running, not being able to connect to a service, you're able to do more advanced fault finding, and you're able to get some assistance. As well as the troubleshooting tools, the auditing is improved. The descriptions of what has been, what has gone wrong, has been improved, and that's in our interest as well. Less help desk calls, less issues for Microsoft. So it was definitely in our interest to improve that. What also has been improved as well is the basic workflows to get some of the core features up and running with FIM quickly. So I would say that the sort of the core things that users have come to us, I guess they're fixing the car. The core things that people have come to request of FIM to do is credential management, password resets, which require workflows, which I just showed you. Also provisioning users to AD, so through that interface to be able to provision users or to provision them from a HR system. Also the third thing is group and distribution list management. So those are really core things that FIM does. Getting users to manage their own security groups or distribution lists, more commonly, manage their passwords or provision users. So out of the box, the workflows are actually friendlier. So anyone who's deployed FIM would know that, okay, you've got to play around with the workflow, you've got to play around with the MPRs, you've got to get it all up and running, and it's not as out of the box as an experience as people would hope. Those workflows have been improved for this R2, so that's good news. What I did want to mention was a program that we also have to help that sort of easier deployment for that more medium-sized enterprise. So there's actually a program called FIM in a Box. A bit of an overstatement, but I like the sort of the goal of the program. And that's to give system integrators. So if you're an enterprise, you like what you see, you want to be able to reset passwords, you want to use a partner or a system integrator to deploy FIM, they need skills with FIM. They can't just pick it up like maybe a well-known solution like Exchange. What FIM in the Box is a program where those medium-sized enterprises can do those things more easily. So if you want to do password resets or maybe provisioning to AD and a few other connected systems, yeah, there's actually a programmatized service set, so you can use your incumbent partner to do that, as opposed to trying to battle it out yourself. So there is actually a program for making life a little bit easier for doing FIM deployments. I don't want to over-exaggerate it. Identity management takes expertise, and it takes knowledge, and it takes experience. You've got to connect different systems. You've got to deal with a whole bunch of tricky questions that get thrown around. So, I don't want to devalue the skill set that's used, but we as a vendor are always trying to make it just a little bit easier to do those basic pieces of functionality. Enhanced performance. Okay, this was another thing that people were crying out for. So the enhanced performance, the actual staging of the data from the synchronization to the FIM service, those who are familiar with the very old version of the solution will know that the old version of the solution was quite rapid. To do the sync service, it was quite lean. There was none of that really good wizard-based workflows. You didn't have to import the data out of the sync service into the FIM service. So it was lean, but it was very basic. FIM came along and it took the data into the FIM database, had all these wizard-based rules enacted on it, slowed things down dramatically for that initial load. It really wouldn't impact users, because what you do is you do an initial load over the weekend and then it would be up and running. You just do delta syncs from there. That is problematic because it took so long to do. So I'll give you an example of the performance improvement, which I was quite impressed with. So Microsoft, we with our internal use, we've got about 97,000 users and about 450,000 groups. So it's a very large enterprise spread across multiple forests, but roughly 100,000 users and 450,000 groups. It used to take 4.5 days to do that initial load. So that's okay because you could do it over a long period of time. But if you messed up your MPRs, you did your initial load, looked at it and went, oh, well, we've done something wrong, you've suddenly set your project back a week. So it was quite risky for your project plan. So with the Microsoft with the Microsoft IT deployment, from 4.5 days, it's 5 hours. So significant performance improvements, especially for that initial load. So those of you who are familiar with the initial load, expect that kind of improvement. Down to 5 hours is what it's taken for MSIT. MA connectivity. So who here is familiar with the concept of a management agent? Okay, everyone, I was a bit worried with the workflow stuff. Okay, so for the management agents, essentially connectors to different data stores. So if you want to get to Oracle or DB2 or Novell's eDirectory, you've got to deploy a management agent. Most enterprises have more management agents than what is covered out of the box. You can either export your data to a SQL database and then use the SQL management agent, or you can create your own. Putting data into a flat file or a SQL database is really quick. It's really easy to do. Not secure, though. So creating your own management agents is a preferred option for security-conscious organizations, such as a financial services organization. So MA connectivity. What we've done with the new version is we've actually got a new extensible framework. It's changed its name. It's called the EZMA, is the old version. It's the extensible MA framework. It's now called the ECMA. I know. And the problem is especially with the product team folks, most of them speaking with an American accent, it sounds exactly the same. So you'll see documentation which says ECMA, EZMA, and sometimes it's even be called ECMA2. So what it is the new framework. So just look beyond those sort of problems in pronunciation. So the new framework, and I'm going to call it the correct name, the EZMA, or sorry, the ECMA. I've done it already. Yes, everyone does it. So the ECMA. So it's a new extensible framework. It can coexist with your old management agents, which have been built onto the old platform. All new management agents which are being created by Microsoft will be using the new framework. So the management agents are coming out of cycle with FIM R2. So we've got one team working on the R releases or the new releases of FIM. We've got another team working on management agents, and these are some of the ones which are requested. So SAP, ECC6, Oracle ERP, a new Lotus Notes MA. So these things are all being built on the new framework. And so this new framework is good for us as well. So it speeds up Microsoft's time to deploy the new management agents, but it also helps you guys. So I'm sure any heterogeneous enterprise has a boutique accounting package. It has a boutique HR system. Microsoft's not going to come out with a management agent for those. So you might have to build them yourself if you don't want to put the data into a flat file. You also can use partners as well. There's a few system integrators who created their own. So you can. There are partners, especially some in Australia, who've created management agents, and they productize them as well. So you don't have to do it yourself. If you need it for a boutique HR system, for example, there is a very good website which has a list of third-party organization MAs. What we're going to do is go down further into the MA creation in a later session. So what time is it exactly? It's actually called SEC 304, and that's at 11:30 on Friday. And Phil Whipps is going to go through the creation of the ECMA. He's actually created a new MA against the Twitter API. So he's importing data from Twitter just as a really nice example of how you can manipulate data on the new platform. So main points, new management agents are coming out. Can't give you a date on those, but they're coming out. But if you want to create them yourselves, there's greater speed to deployment, as proved by Phil with his knocking up a Twitter MA. All right, so we're getting towards the end of the session, but one thing that I wanted to cover as well, and I didn't put into the agenda because I just thought of this later, there are also some improvements as well with the support for Outlook. So previously there wasn't full support for Outlook 2010 with FIM, both on 32 and 64-bit. So those extensions to be able to make an email look like, or an authorization request look like a meeting request, that wasn't completely available. That will be in FIM R2. So full support for 32 and 64-bit Outlook 2010. Also, there's greater language support as well, which I should mention. I mean, all of us here speak English, badly or not, but you might have you might be a global enterprise, such as a mining company, where you want to have that FIM interface available in a non-English language. There always was the core languages supported with FIM, but there are extended ones now. So Korean is one in our particular geography, which is added to the actual new languages list. So a bunch of new languages. If you work for a global enterprise and you want to make sure that your users in a different geography can read the FIM portal and it's not just getting served at them in English. Okay, so in conclusion, FIM 2010 R2, I can't give you a time frame on when it's coming out. So the community evaluation is available at the moment. The CEP is out at the moment. Feel free to, I'll give you the link where you can join the evaluation. You can get the beta and play around with it. You're able to set it up and have a look at it like I've done just here. The product team has given a very, very conservative estimate on the time frame for it. They've said they commit to the first half of next year. So 6 months is a long window. I was in Redmond as I was playing around with this with some of my colleagues from Microsoft Consulting, and it's coming out earlier than that. I think they're being very conservative of that. We've got that code, able to install it. The beta seems good, but there's no commitment, so I can't tell you the definitive date of when it's coming out. So the beta is out, which I can say, and we'll take it from there. The things that are available in the solution are credential management. You've seen the web-based password reset. What I did want to emphasize was non-IE machines. So Firefox is something that people were crying out for as well, and they don't have to use Kerberos delegation at the back end, so you can serve out both the registration and the reset, but importantly, you can take that away. So just give people the ability to reset their passwords from a non-domain join machine. Reporting. We're now able to do historical reporting. The data warehouse in System Center Service Manager will hold that for as long as it's required, or as long as you configure that to be held. You're able to get some rich reporting out of it as well. So the good part is you're able to get some really rich reporting, both through Excel but also SSRS. You can see quite easily I was able to define that really small group. But the probably challenging part for both your enterprise, if you already have System Center, great. If you don't, then you're going to have to make just some people investment to get the time to deploy System Center. You're not going to have to make a financial investment for purchasing the solution. It's a limited use license, so you don't have to pay Microsoft any money, but you're going to have to understand how to deploy System Center to do your reporting. Ease of use, there's a best practice analyzer. The initial load performance, again, I want to emphasize that, from Microsoft, 450,000 groups, roughly 100,000 users, 4.5 days, down to 5 hours, so significant performance improvements. I don't want to guarantee that's for your enterprise, but that initial load has been significantly increased. And also the workflows have been improved for doing those really core out-of-the-box functionalities such as resetting your passwords, provisioning to AD, also managing groups and distribution lists. Finally, for our system integrator friends in the audience, there's the FIM in the Box program. So you can sort of productize that, give your customers a better idea of how long it's going to take. Quite often organizations say, how long is this going to take us? So FIM in the Box makes it easier to do that. And finally, advanced MA configuration, more MAs coming out, a better development platform, ECMA. All the functionality will be going through in more in depth on 11:30. on Friday, where Phil was going to do a presentation on the great work that he's done both with a health-based customer in Victoria and also the integration with the Twitter API. So you'll see a working MA developed on the ECMA platform. So come along to that if you've got something spare at 11:30 on Friday. All right, here's something you can download from the site, become part of the team blog, search for Formfront team block. That's a really good piece of information to share, and please be part of the beta program. For more general, high-level information, there were a few hands that didn't go up, microsoft.com/IDA. IDA stands for Identity and Access. And also the LinkedIn site, Microsoft Forefront Identity Manager Group. If you're looking for a new job, that's a place to join. So you'll see quite often every day we all get, those of us who are part of it, well, I require a FIM expert in Arizona and stuff like that. So if you have expertise in FIM, and genuinely if you want to sort of keep abreast of what's happening in the community and you might want to do a contracting job or something like that, it's a hot product at the moment because of those things that I talked about at the start. People need to deploy Link in multi-forest scenarios. People want to do BPOLs in multi-forest scenarios. It's a solution for us, which customers are asking a lot about. So, yeah, if you invest some of your professional time in FIM, then there's some good results which are going to come from it. So I'll leave my presentation here, and we've got about 5 or so minutes to do some final Q&A. Any questions? Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of posts and questions while we were going through, and noticed that really the only feedback that we got back about it was the client side components registering can't be rebranded.
Mm.
Is that something that's going to come in part two, or do we have to be waiting?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so the question is branding the portal. Like, it's very Microsoft focused. You want to put your own organization look and feel. So what I'll do is I've actually got a slide on the test matrix for that. So there's actually a matrix between R2, portal, old solution, yes, no, can, and you'll actually be surprised. You'll be presently surprised. Far on the old version, it was just no, can't rebrand, can do a little bit here. On the new one, it's yes, and then there's one no there. So your answer is there's greater flexibility, and I'll share the test matrix with you. Any other questions? Yeah, up the back.
The password reset, is it possible to configure it so that it emails half the password to one person that confirms your identity and then the other half to another person?
Yeah, okay, so the question was, is it possible to email half the password to someone and then do the other half yourself, those kind of things. So the first part, it doesn't email the password out. So the answer is no right off the bat. So you're familiar with that concept? Did you want to email the password, or did you want to email the authorization?
We have a specific requirement whereby the initial password can't be presented to the person requesting it.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, so you're talking about the initial password.
Well, if you do a self password reset, our current system, the person doesn't get the full password . They only get half the password.
But they're creating the password, they're not having it set.
So if they've already got an existing password, they've forgot what it is, they go to do a self reset, so the password questions and answers, only get half the password, and then the other half of the password.
Yeah, okay, so I just want to clarify one thing is I didn't go through that for brevity's sake, but there's no password being sent to you. The next screen when you reset the password is you actually create it. No one sees it, you type it in. So that's very secure. That's more secure than any instance. Also for the thing that you wanted to do, if you had to email a password, such as the first time a user joins the organisation, you can split it up like that. So actually having users reset their own password, then that's by far a more secure way of doing it.
Is it a
It's far more secure to have people use their own password. You just don't want to send them their passwords. For new users, they can't generate their own. But come up at the end, I'll go into some more detail with it with you.
Just
yep.
A question on that same topic.
Yep.
You add in the password reset, you add an approval task into the workflow, so someone tries to reset their password, their manager gets asked to approve that for them to confirm their identity before they get prompted to use the password.
Yeah, so the question was, can you put an authorization process into the approval workflow? And that's exactly what's in the text matrix now. Okay, so that's what's being tested now. Not so much for sending approvals to managers, but for things like OTP resets, putting the CatchPer in there as well. So the answer is the intention is there to do it. And there are options. There's a lot of options, and we know that there's stuff you can do out of the box. But that's all being tested at the moment to add that extra level of authorization. So the answer is yes, but we just haven't gone through the complete test matrix to know exactly what it is. Yeah, at the back there. Yes, the question is the FIM 2010 R2 in-place upgrade? And the answer is yes, but with some caveats. So yes. So the answer is predominantly yes, yeah. But there are some circumstances, for example, if you've customized MAs which cause conflicts. So predominantly yes. I'm happy to say yes. Yeah. So the old MA framework can coexist with the new MAs, but I'll show you the actual caveats as well. So, yeah. So it's probably important to go through the exact caveats. So predominantly yes, but watch out for a few gotchas.
Okay. Yeah. The test matrix you've been talking about, is that available on the blog site?
There's a few of them for the test matrix for extensibility of the portal. Or for customization of the portal, or the test matrix for the extended authentication mechanisms. Yeah. Okay. So the one for configuration of the portal. That's just something I have got personally, so I can share it with you. That's no problem. The one with the test matrix for configuration. That's in flight at the moment, so it's not available publicly. They're testing things against RSA tokens, smart cards, CatchPer, that kind of stuff. I haven't seen any of that available, so the answer is no on that one. Thanks. Yep. Yeah, sure. So the question is, how do you stop identity harvesting? First one is you use the experience of your system integrator who's done that before. So there's not one silver bullet to do that. So there's a few things that you can do. So for example, you have the proximity gateway able to see requests if they come from the same source and then drop those requests. That's the first one. Second one is you lock out users if they've had too many tries at things. So if people are trying to harvest that information, then you set the workflows for a low response. So they're actually being locked out of it right away. So you actually set the workflows. You set the access gateway to minimize that problem. It's a matter of risk minimization for that. Yeah. Yeah, so the question is, can it hook up to SCOM? So, yeah, there is a management pack for SCOM. Any final questions? Well, I asked for them, I'll get them. Yep.
Okay. The question is, basically, you know how you got the user provisioning in FIM?
Yep.
Can you fire off an SCCM task sequence, say, for example, say, well, I've got a new machine to go off, like, finally go to the top cloud tomorrow, where, say, if I run the user request, I want to go off and say, here's machine A, group on the file, and is there anything else? Is there a function?
Yeah, so the question is there integration with SCCM for provisioning users? PowerShell is the way to go. So there's a lot of calls on PowerShell. So for example, provisioning Link is my favorite example. So when you're provisioning Link users, there's a whole list of PowerShell scripts that you call. You can use a custom activity from FIM, so a workflow essentially, that calls those PowerShell scripts. There's actually a Microsoft consulting team in South America who said, oh, that's a bit ugly. So they actually created their own management agent, which calls the same scripts within the management agent. So you can sort of productize that a bit more. So you can call PowerShell scripts. That's the way to go. I'll call the end of the questions and answers. Thanks very much for your time. I'll still hang around and answer any other questions you've got one-to-one. But enter an evaluation and win a prize. Congratulations. Thanks very much.